You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Welcome to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Wednesday, November 17th. I'm Renee from Drake University, and here is our first story. The headline reads, Iowa Western to Expand. College will buy space in Missouri Valley, Harlan, expand career technical programs. By Tim Johnson. Iowa Western Community College will purchase space in buildings in Missouri Valley and Harlan to expand its career technical programs in southwest Iowa. The college's Board of Trustees approved the purchase of part of the Trivium Life Services, formerly Crossroads of Western Iowa, building at 115 South Harrison Street in Missouri Valley at a cost of $285,000. The space will house a career academy for the Missouri Valley, West Harrison, Logan Magnolia, and Tri-Center Community School Districts. A hallway will separate its section of the facility from Trivium's, Iowa Western President Daniel Kinney said during Monday's board meeting. The college will pay $90,000 in earnest money and have 90 days to inspect the property more closely and seek resolution of any problems that are uncovered, Kinney said. Plans are to offer welding, electrical, construction, and agriculture classes in the facility. In Harlan, the college will purchase the rest of its Shelby County Center building from the city of Harlan for $1, Kinney said. If the college didn't need the facility at some point in the future, it, in turn, would sell it back to the city for $1. Currently, the college owns the south half and the city owns the north half, where it has some of its offices. The city would continue to operate its Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development offices there. We need to build some relationships with them, he said. I think it's a great opportunity for us. I think we can take this to the next level. The Harlan City Council plans to consider the proposal this week, Kinney said. Plans are for the college to offer electromechanical training for local companies and automotive and diesel, industrial technology, healthcare, and trades instruction for students in the facility. People are pretty excited about it, said Trustee Randy Pash, who represents District 9, which includes Harlan Community School District, as well as Avoca, Hancock, Shelby, Tennant, Walnut, Elkhorn, Kim, Belton, Tri-Center, and part of Irwin, Kirkman, Manila Community School Districts. 152 high school students attended Iowa Western's Summer Early Start program this year on the college's main campus and at satellite centers, according to Tom Gilmore, dean of the high school partnerships. They studied automotive, diesel and electrical technology, nursing, computer science, engineering, and science. The program is free to students, Gilmore said. The state reimburses the college enough to break even. It's an important program because high schools don't always have teachers qualified to teach dual credit classes, he told the board. It's an important program because high schools don't always have teachers qualified to teach dual credit classes, he told the board. Board Vice President John Marshall asked whether the college's Early Childhood Center had a program to help people become certified child care program providers. He said there is a big community need for child care. The college has a non-credit program that helps prepare students for that, but doesn't include certification, said Matt Manusco, Executive Director of Economic and Workforce Development. Becoming state certified partly depends on the facility, Kinney said. He added that the college had tried to get last dollar scholar funding for the child care. But it did not qualify because childcare doesn't pay a living wage. The Pottawatomie County Community Foundation is trying to get donations to help expand childcare in the community, Marshall said. I think this is important enough, we should push to find a way to do this, he said. In two curriculum changes, the college will redesign the graphic design program and bring it back as an associate degree program, said Jennifer Kruger, interim vice president of academic affairs. It will also replace the current theater transfer program with a musical theater transfer program. Approved a proposal to lease a minibus from the Iowa Western Foundation, which would purchase a 2020 Freightliner Defender at a cost of $160,460. Athletics are needing one, said Eddie Holtz, Vice President of Management Services. Also approved is a proposal to borrow $800,000 from the foundation to help fund renovation of the baseball and softball complex. The college has contracted with Triple Crown to host two baseball camps a year for the next 10 years, which will provide revenue to pay back the loan, Holtz said. The next headline reads, Slow Growth Adds to Worker Shortage, Iowa Business Group Focusing on Immigration Reforms, by James Q. Lynch. As Iowa employers struggle to find people to fill jobs, the state's long-term population trends are not encouraging, leaders of two statewide business groups told a state panel on Tuesday. Every manufacturer we talk to, whether they're in Waverly or Waterloo or Clarinda, they say, I can hire 40 people tomorrow, Nicole Crane of the Iowa Association of Business and Industry told the Empower Rural Iowa Task Force. It's not just an Iowa problem. A Stateline News Service analysis of federal statistics from August, the latest available, found 42 states with more jobs available than people were looking for. In Iowa, there are 1.4 openings for each unemployed person, the Stateline analysis found. The problem is unlikely to go away anytime soon because of Iowa's slow population growth, added Joe Murphy of the Iowa Business Council, which represents some of Iowa's largest employers with a combined annual payroll of nearly $9 billion. A healthy state is a growing state, he said. However, the 2020 census showed Iowa's population growing about 4.7% compared with the national rate of 8%. Iowa's five-year population change rate is an anemic 1%. That's a very concerning number for us as we think about the future of workforce and economic development, Murphy told the panel, which is chaired by Iowa Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg. Right now, Murphy said, more people are leaving Iowa than coming into the state. That's one reason the Business Council is focused on federal immigration reform. We really think that a key to success for all of us moving forward is to promote reasonable immigration reform and modernization efforts, Murphy said. We know, and many of your rural communities have embraced, legal immigration as a pathway forward for economic development. ABI, which has 1,500 member companies with locations in all 99 Iowa counties, is working to help employers reach out to immigrants and refugees from Afghanistan and elsewhere, Crane said. To attract more people to Iowa and retain those here, Murphy and Crane urged the panel to address the needs for better broadband connectivity, childcare resources, and workforce housing. The Business Council believes housing can be an economic catalyst for growth, Murphy said. Looking at ways in which we can grow that population density, not just in urban centers, is key to our long-term growth strategies. In its marketing to attract people to Iowa, Murphy said, the council focused on safe neighborhoods, strong schools, and little or no commute times to get to work. Living in Iowa is easy compared to a lot of other places that are high cost, Murphy said. This is the state you can live in, the life that you've actually always dreamed of living, the cost of living, the affordable housing, the ease of entry into the workforce, the ease of entry into community projects. This is where you can really make a name for yourself. Programs the state has initiated are helping businesses and communities across Iowa, according to Crane, noting that Iowa has the largest percentage of working women and two-parent households in the workforce, she said. State resources have helped create some successful childcare programs in conjunction with employers. She also highlighted the impact that the Manufacturing 4.0 initiative can have on attracting skilled workers and retaining Iowa companies that might consider a move if they can't fill job slots. The initiative, focused on advanced technologies, and grants are helping companies in Bremer and Jackson counties consider implementing robotics, upskilling employees, and staying in rural Iowa. Modernizing manufacturing processes also helps our manufacturers meet their economic potential, Greg said, because rather than having jobs just remain unfilled, we have the ability to automate some of those processes. On the front page of the paper, there is a photo by Joe Schreer titled, A Reprieve from the Cold. Several people walked to and from Council Bluffs on the Bob Carey Pedestrian Bridge on Tuesday, November 16th, 2021, The warm, sunny weather brought many people out to enjoy the day as colder days approach. This picture of people walking on the bridge also has a little puppy. Our next article headline reads, Looking at new third deer plant. What's in Deer's new offer? Changes to incentive programs for UAW workers by Kara Smith. More than a month into a strike, 10,000 Deer and company workers with the International Union, United Automobile, Aerospace, and Agricultural Implement Workers of America are set to vote on a third tentative agreement on Wednesday. The latest includes modifications to the company's Continuous Improvement Pay System, or CIP. These changes are the only differences from the second agreement, which was rejected a 55% to 45% vote earlier this month. That agreement gained majority support from some Quad City Union locals, but was rejected by locals in Waterloo and Dubuque. Some Deer officials, workers, and union representatives said the incentives program can be confusing. One worker from the John Deere Parts Distribution Center in Milan, who has been working at Deere for over a decade, said for newer employees, it can be difficult to grasp the full extent of how the program impacts their pay. If you're not the people who work for this every day, they are having problems chewing through some of it, the worker said. So what is SIP? SIP is a team-based sharing system that provides an opportunity for employees to make extra money when they demonstrate a level of performance over a long period of time. Workers are put into SIP teams that can make extra money when they perform at or above baseline productivity set by Deere. Only some Deere production workers are under the incentive program, so the language doesn't impact all employees. The program aims to streamline production processes among workers to increase productivity. New production goals are set for teams that hit benchmarks, and workers earn additional pay based on their ability to hit the benchmarks. In the latest tentative agreement, there would be an expected productivity increase of 4% each year, instead of being divided into half years. This way, employees adjust production levels only once a year, but maintain the same increase in productivity goals. Employees would also be paid more in weekly incentive bonuses under the new agreement. In the new tentative agreement, the base level of productivity pay for employees on SIP would equal 120%, which is a 5% increase. Workers' concerns. Workers who've criticized the program say while it's designed to boost productivity, it's often difficult to hit the threshold that triggers pay increases. Workers want the company to make further investments in tools and equipment as production goals increase. The company says we're supposed to make enough improvements, that we're supposed to compensate for that, a worker at Davenport Works said, but the company itself has not made those improvements over time. Although workers are officially required to work toward productivity levels that reach 120%, employees reported being told they should reach 130%. A Davenport worker said reaching increasingly higher production goals began to take a physical toll. I realized real fast I just tore up my body and slowed me down as a human, the worker said. Also in the contract are terms that protect worker earnings in case of supply chain disruptions, a common problem across the industry given the COVID-19 pandemic. Although there were supply chain protections for workers in the new tentative agreement, workers said that it would have been ideal to see specific wording on under what situations their earnings are protected. To me, as a person working on the floor, the machine breaks down for a week or two, that's catastrophic downtime, said a worker at the John Deere Parts Distribution Center in Milan. That's a large impact on my wages. But to the company, they say, well, the roof has to fall on the building before it can get catastrophic. They left it very vague. Some workers said they'd vote in favor of the contract, despite their concerns over how the new contract is worded. Deere talked about shifting a little bit of contract language, which is what they told us in the beginning, said one worker, who plans to support the deal. SIP has always been a problem, and Deere stuck to their guns. This article is accompanied by a photo of UAW picketers standing outside John Deere Davenport Works on Friday, November 12th. There are two of them holding signs that say UAW on strike. They look cold, they have winter gear on, and their hands are in their pockets. The photo is taken by Bobby Metcalf. Our next article reads, Scott Robinson retires from IWCC board. A trustee served for 26 years. By Tim Johnson. This article is also accompanied by a photo by Tim Johnson. It is two white men with glasses sitting at a table conversing before a board meeting. Those two men are Stan Sibley and Scott Robinson, visiting before an Iowa Western Community College Board of Trustees meeting on Monday, November 15th, 2021. It was a farewell meeting for Robinson, who retired from the board Monday after 26 years of service. The Iowa Western Community College Board of Trustees said farewell to one of its longest-serving members on Monday. Scott Robinson did not seek re-election when his term ended this year. The board held a reception before its regular board meeting to thank him for his 26 years of service. He represented District 4, which includes Atlantic, Cumberland, Oneida, Messina, Griswold, and Riverside Community School Districts. He was replaced by Chris Blake of Wyota. Robinson has attended more than 300 meetings, President Daniel Kinney said during the meeting. I've enjoyed every minute of it, Robin said. I've had a lot of fun, lots of good memories. He also has 11 championship rings, he said. 26 years is a long time, Robinson said. I was 44 when I was first elected to the board. I'm now 70. Robinson joined the board in 1995, just a year after the first president, Kinney, took office. He has at least one distinction from the other members. I probably hold the record for calling into a meeting from Georgetown, Guyana. He said. That was to cast his vote in favor of starting a football program at the college. I stayed on until they got the vote done, he said. It was an expensive call. Of course, the board has dealt with many challenges during the past 26 years, passing five bond issues, building new facilities, deciding whether to build the Riviere Suites housing complex, weathering lean years as the state kept a tight grip on tax revenue, and surviving a closure and adaptations prompted by the COVID-19 pandemic, said Board President Connie Hornbeck. Scott is not a man of many words, but when he speaks with his heart and with his mind, she said. Robinson has enjoyed watching the new buildings go up on the college's main campus in Council Bluffs, he said. He also enjoyed watching the students. I like watching the kids go through and graduate, he said. Robinson grew up on a farm northwest of Atlantic and graduated from Atlantic High School in 1969. He joined the ROTC at Iowa State University and graduated in 1973 with a degree in meteorology. He served on active duty in the Air Force for 6 years. He was stationed at Hahn Air Force Base near Lotzohausen, Germany, for 3 or 4 years. He retired from active duty in 1979 and moved back to Atlantic and farmed with his dad. He and his wife, Sarah, now live on an acreage in a house his father and grandfather built in the 1960s. He continued to serve in the Iowa Air National Guard until 2001. He was deployed 5 times. He flew fighter planes to Iraq and Japan for exercises, flew over Turkey and many U.S. states. We've flown all over the U.S. in exercises, he said. In the late 1980s, he shot at targets in exercises off Cape Canaveral. We flew right over a space shuttle that was sitting on the launch pad, he said. Robinson also flew for a private company for 8 or 9 years, he said. Robinson's background as a pilot surfaced during his years on the Board of Trustees when the administration was discussing shutting down the college's aviation technology program. He was a staunch advocate for the program, Hornbeck said. The aviation people who were hiring our graduates came to a board meeting and said they'd be willing to pony up, she said. They wanted the program there. Since then, the program has gone through some upgrades as an aviation technology hangar was built at the Council Bluffs Municipal Airport and new equipment installed. The college has planes that students can work on, including a Piper Cheyenne 2XL twin turboprop donated to the program in 2020 by Dr. Robert Folk of Omaha. It's been a very strong program as of recent years, said Matt Mancusco. Executive Director of Economic and Workforce Development. They do a great job of preparing students for the FAA tests. Now the program has 25 first-year students, the maximum admitted, and 20 second-year students, Mancuso said. The next article, Face of the Day, Jennifer Green, with a photo of Jennifer, a white woman with long dark hair, courtesy of Monica Sempec Photography, LLC. Pottawatomie County Community Foundation is excited to join the national network of over 800 community foundations throughout America who are celebrating National Community Foundation Week. This week, we celebrate people active in the philanthropic community and dedicated to the enrichment of our world. Pottawatomie County Community Foundation is delighted to feature difference maker Jennifer Green with the Charles E. Lakin Foundation for her commitment to creating impact in our community. Jennifer manages the grant activities of the Charles E. Lakin Foundation and serves on the Southwest Iowa Mental Health and Substance Abuse Fund Committee at PCCF. After learning about all of the great things PCCF was doing through their various grants and seeing how they built up the community, who wouldn't want to be involved? Jennifer said. She said she feels that PCCF builds up local nonprofits through grant funding and lends their expertise on how to fundraise and garner community support, which is vital for nonprofits to build upon their missions. Jennifer's previous work in the child welfare and public health fields guides her desire to assist with the Southwest Iowa Mental Health and Substance Abuse Fund at PCCF. Jennifer said she appreciates that this fund not only provides financial resources for bolstering mental health education and awareness, but it also helps encourage collaborations among nonprofits, which is key to helping communities. This fund has already impacted area nonprofits throughout Southwest Iowa in providing education and awareness to the community, she said. I hope this fund continues to grow and that nonprofits working with us continue their collaboration to expand their services, education, and awareness throughout Southwest Iowa. Jennifer shared that the Charles E. Lakin Foundation fully supports the initiatives of PCCF. This is evident through their financial support to create the new Florence M. and Charles E. Lakin Center for Community Giving. Further, we illustrate our support through the Lakin Foundation developing a donor-advised fund with PCCF, demonstrating our continued partnership and working relationships to strengthen all of Southwest Iowa with both funding and resources, she said. Our board feels that PCCF is a vital tool in the community to help build out individual philanthropy, as well as ensure that there is future investment in Council Bluffs in Southwest Iowa. PCCF works with individuals, families, businesses, nonprofits, and governmental entities to establish endowment funds and other philanthropic solutions that will benefit the community to future generations. To learn more, visit ourpccf.org, Pottawatomie County Community Foundation. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Wednesday, November 17th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Renee from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 1-877-404-4747. The title reads, UNMC's Ice Rink to Open Later This Month by Kelsey Stewart, Omaha World Herald. Ice skating's returning to the University of Nebraska Medical Center campus. UNMC's outdoor rink will open later this month. The rink took a hiatus last year because of the coronavirus pandemic. The rink opens to the public November 27th and will remain open through January 30th. The outdoor rink is east of 42nd Street between Emil Street and Dewey Avenue in Omaha. Masks are optional because the rink is outside, but officials ask skaters to stay home if they recently have tested positive for COVID-19 or suspect they have COVID. They also should check potential symptoms on UNMC's free COVID app. Regular rink hours are 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sunday. Admission is $7, which includes skates. Only cash and credit cards will be accepted. No checks or debit cards. Free parking is available in Lot 15, a surface lot on 40th Street between Dewey and Emil. The rink will be closed Christmas Day and will have shortened hours on Christmas Eve. It will have extended hours during students' holiday break from December 20th to January 9th. In case of inclement weather, skaters should check whether the rink is open by visiting its Facebook page or by calling 402-559-0697. This article is accompanied by a picture of a skating rink with lots of, looks like kids, dressed up in warm weather gear, scarves, gloves, skating around. The caption reads, UNMC's ice rink opens to the public November 27th. It took a hiatus last year because of the pandemic. Library news. Making a difference, sharing time, talent, and treasure. This article is accompanied by a picture of the Council Bluffs Public Library at 400 Willow Avenue. Glennie Junt, a financial associate with Thrivent Financial, will be at the Council Bluffs Public Library on Thursday for an information program on how to make the most out of our resources to make a difference in the world. See how to make your generosity align with your life's priorities, the press release said. Making a difference doesn't have to happen on a grand scale. The truth is, you have the power to make a positive change by proactively and intentionally sharing your gifts. According to the release, those who will attend will learn the different types and ways of giving, explore how your passions and emotions motivate you to give, evaluate your giving so you can make intentional choices about generosity. The program starts at 6:30 p.m. in Meeting Room B, and all those attending must register before, since space is limited due to COVID-19. Masks are recommended. This program is free to the public, and more information can be found at councilbluffslibrary.org or by calling 712-323-7553, extension 132. The next article in our lifestyle section reads, Times Square is back open on New Year's Eve with vax proof. This is from New York Associated Press. Crowds will once again fill New York's Times Square this year for New Year's Eve with proof of COVID-19 vaccination required for revelers who want to watch the ball drop in person, Mayor Bill de Blasio announced Tuesday. Yes, we are proud to announce that Times Square's wonderful celebration in Times Square, the ball drop, everything, is coming back full strength the way we love it, said de Blasio at a virtual news briefing. Hundreds of thousands of people there to celebrate. We can finally get back together again. It's going to be amazing. Tom Harris, the president of the Times Square Alliance, said all spectators aged 5 and over will be asked to show proof of full vaccination. People who can't be vaccinated because of a disability will have to provide proof of a negative COVID-19 test, he said. The New Year's celebration, perhaps the city's most iconic public gathering, was a socially distant affair during the height of the pandemic last year. Obituaries. Howard Lee Ball, Jr., August 24, 1949, to November 14, 2021, Omaha, Nebraska. The family will receive friends Wednesday, November 17th from 5 to 7 p.m., followed by Virgil service at 7 p.m., all at West Center Chapel. Mass of Christian burial, Thursday, November 18th at 12:30 p.m. at the St. Stephen and Martyr Catholic Church at 16701 S Street. Interment, Omaha National Cemetery, Thursday, November 18th at 11 a.m. with military honors by Benson VFW Post 2503. In lieu of flowers, memorials are suggested to Nebraska Vietnam Veterans Memorial. To view live broadcast of the vigil service, mass, and graveside services, please go to www.hefei, hefey.com. That is HEAFEY.com. And click the View Live Cast button on the homepage. Services are arranged by the Hefey Hoffman Dwork Cutler West Center Chapel at 7805 West Center Road, Omaha, Nebraska. Phone number 402-391-3900. Pamela Whitney Bogardus. Pamela Whitney Bogardus, age 74, passed away peacefully on November 13, 2021, in Omaha, Nebraska, with her daughters by her side. Pamela was born December 31, 1946, in Omaha, Nebraska, the oldest of seven children to the late Donald C. and Joan E. Young Whitney. She graduated from Abraham Lincoln. Pamela was born December 31, 1946, in Omaha, Nebraska, the oldest of seven children to the late Donald C. and Joan E., maiden name Young, Whitney. She graduated from Abraham Lincoln High School in 1965. She was blessed with two daughters, Jennifer and Julie. Pamela married Robert Yanders on April 27, 1985, and shared their lives together the past 36 years. Pamela's career began at Northwestern Bell Telephone as an operator and progressed to manager at Quest before she retired after 35-plus years of service. Pamela cared deeply about her family and loved most of all being together with her family and friends. She was an avid reader and loved a good game of bridge. She enjoyed traveling, cooking, gardening, and theater. She liked to have fun and had a great sense of humor. In addition to her parents, Pamela was preceded in death by her brothers David Whitney and Brian Whitney, stepson Robert Michael Yanders. Pamela is survived by her husband Bob Yanders of Council Bluffs, daughters Jennifer, maiden name Douglas, Miss Botch of Omaha, Julie. Pamela is survived by her husband Bob Yanders of Council Bluffs, daughters Jennifer and spouse Douglas, Miss Botch of Omaha, Julie and spouse Nathan Lovestad of Bogardus, Lakewood. Grandchildren Luella Lovestad, Charlie and Jack Miss Botch. Stepdaughters Lori and spouse Jerry Bachman of Omaha. Lisa Yanders of Phoenix, Arizona. Step-grandchildren Kaylee, Alex, John, Otto, and Jared. Brothers Mark and spouse Carrie Whitney, Giles and spouse Debbie Whitney, all of Council Bluffs, sisters Susan and spouse Bruce Radford of Glenwood, Iowa, Marcia and spouse Steve Lampman of Weston, Nebraska, sister-in-law Ruby Whitney of Council Bluffs, as well as many nieces and nephews. Visitation Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m., funeral service Friday, 12 p.m., all at Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Funeral Home. Interment Memorial Park Cemetery, followed by a luncheon at the Walnut Hill Reception Center. Memorials are suggested to Council Bluffs Public Library. For more information, visit Cutler O'Neill at cutleroneill.com or call 322-7779. Patricia Pat L. Carlson. Patricia, or Pat L. Carlson, age 85 years. Pat was born November 12, 1936, to the late Leo and Ruth Hill in Council Bluffs. She passed away November 14, 2021, at Brookstone Meadows, Elkhorn, Nebraska. Pat graduated from Thomas Jefferson High School with the class of 1955. She was a lifelong resident of Council Bluffs, where she worked as a customer representative for People's Natural Gas until her retirement after 20-plus years of service. Pat was an active member of Timothy Lutheran Church in Council Bluffs. She very much enjoyed her card clubs, bowling, and stock car racing, winning the Powder Puff Derby. Along with her parents, Pat is preceded in death by her son, Jeff Archer, son-in-law, Jay Felt, sister, Carolyn Mahan. She is survived by her children, Debbie Felt, Janet Thomason, Deanne, spouse Mike, Intrary, Ron Archer, Randy, spouse Jennifer Archer, many grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren, brothers, David and spouse Cheryl Hill, Raymond and spouse Susan Hill, many other loving family and friends. Services are Friday at 1 p.m. at the Timothy Lutheran Church, Intermet Cedar Lawn Cemetery. Visitation is Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. at the church. Memorials directed by the family. For more information, visit cutlerO'Neill.com or call 322-7779. Colleen J. Haas. Colleen J. Haas, age 89 years, passed away November 16, 2021 at Longview Nursing Home in Missouri Valley, where she has lived since January of 2020. Colleen was born February 22, 1932 in Montgomery County, Iowa, to the late Clyde and Vivian, spouse Scott. Clyde and Vivian, maiden name Scott, Shepherd. She was united in marriage to Ray Chester Haas on October 28, 1950, and they were blessed with two children, Deborah and Kenneth. Colleen worked for Caterpillar Company as the switchboard operator and is member of Community of Christ Church in Missouri Valley and formerly Riverside Congregation in Council Bluffs. Colleen enjoyed sewing and her sewing guild and formerly worked at the Needle Women's Store in Council Bluffs. She was active in her church and served as Sunday school teacher and priesthood teacher. She is preceded in death by her parents Clyde and Vivian, husband Ray, son Kenneth, sister Aneva Heathcote. Colleen is survived by a daughter, Deborah Stevens, and husband Carol, Honey Creek, Iowa, five children and spouses, Chris and Christy Christensen, Jason and Leslie Christensen, Shane and Jill Haas, Rebecca and Riley Kurth, Andrew and Katie Stevens, 14 great-grandchildren. Visitation Friday, 2:30 to 3 p.m., followed by a funeral service at 3 p.m., all at funeral home. Interment, Memorial Park Cemetery. Memorials to Community of Christ Church preferred. For more information, contact Coulter O'Neill at coulterO'Neill.com or 322-7779. Maureen R. Olson. A celebration of Maureen's life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 20th, 2021, at the Minden United Church of Christ, with Pastor Brian Woolhooter officiating. A lunch will follow at the church's fellowship hall. Terry Eugene Scott. Terry Eugene Scott, age 72, passed away November 12, 2021 in Council Bluffs. Born September 9, 1949 in Council Bluffs and graduated from St. Albert High School in 1968, he was united in marriage to Donna Smith on June 1 of 1973. Terry spent 20 years as a career in the U.S. Army before retiring in 1994. He is preceded in death by parents Sinclair and Geraldine Scott. Terry is survived by his wife of 48 years, Donna, sons Edward, Chris, and spouse Kathy, eight grandchildren, Morgan Scott and Josh McFarlane. Morgan Scott and spouse Josh McFarlane, Casey, Nicole, Cade, Allie, and Brooke Scott, Cheyenne and Chloe Rowell, two great-grandchildren, Tanner and Harper McFarlane, brothers Tim, spouse Renee Scott, John, spouse Tammy Scott, nieces and nephews. Visitation is Wednesday, 2 to 3 p.m., followed by celebration of Terry's life at 3 p.m., all at the funeral home. Military rites by the Canesville Riders Honor Guard. Memorials to Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. Luncheon to follow at the Walnut Hill Reception Center. For more information, contact Cutler O'Neill at cutlerO'Neill.com or phone number 322-7779. Address is 545 Willow Avenue, Council Bluffs. Ronald Luer. Ronald Luer, age 79, passed away on November 14, 2021. He was born June 6, 1942, to Merrill and Ruth Winston Luer in Council Bluffs, Iowa. In addition to his parents, he was preceded in death by his sister, Barbara White. Ronald is survived by brother Larry and spouse Carolyn Luer, nephews Stephen and spouse Sharon White, and Randy and spouse Tammy Luer, niece Kai White Davidson. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. at Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home on Saturday, November 20th, 2021. Interment will be held at Memorial Park Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to Epworth Methodist Church, 2447 Avenue B, Council Bluffs, Iowa, 51501. Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home is located at 1221 North 16th Street, Council Bluffs. Phone number 712-256-9988. Raymond Eugene Pruitt. Raymond Eugene Pruitt, age 82, passed away November 13, 2021 at Bethany Lutheran. Born in Council Bluffs on April 11, 1939 to the late William First and Flossie Pruitt. Raymond worked construction and is preceded in death by his parents, three brothers, Bud and John Donaldson, David Pruitt, and sister Shirley. Survivors include wife Connie, son Raymond, and wife Jenny, Shelby, Iowa. Daughter Karina Olson and husband Arnold, nine grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, sisters Norma and Joyce, and husband Carl. Visitation is Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m., followed by cremation, all at the funeral home of Cutler O'Neill. Address 545 Willow Avenue, Council Bluffs. For more information, phone number 322-7779. Now on to sports. First article reads, Reavers ride hot, start to victory. Iowa Western men's basketball wins ranked battle. This article is accompanied by a picture of sophomore Roland McCoy, who's going up for a shot against Central Community College Columbus in a home game on Tuesday. NJCAA Division II, number 12 Iowa Western men's basketball started Monday's home game on a 13-2 run, thanks to 8 points from sophomore guard Roland McCoy, and led by as many as 21 points. But the Reavers had to battle adversity late as number 14 Central Community College Columbus cut the lead to 5 with 2 minutes left in the game. But the Reavers never trailed and won 78-70. I like our poise in the second half, IWCC head coach Chad Van Reesen said. I thought they really challenged us in a lot of areas that we've been challenged with in the past, but I thought they were very consistent with coming at us. I liked how our guys stepped up, never wavered from being confident and doing the things we needed to do to win. The two teams traded baskets early in the contest, and Iowa Western led 25-17 with just over 11 minutes remaining in the first half. The Reavers held their lead and led 44-31 at halftime. McCoy scored 25 points in the first half and finished the game with 28 points. I really felt it during the warm-ups, McCoy said. I got into my rhythm and my shot, and eventually it just carried into the game. I was just focusing on taking the right shots and focusing in on knocking those down. Central slowed down McCoy in the second half, but struggled to find a defensive adjustment to slow him down in the first. McCoy shot 7 of 9 from behind the arc. I was definitely surprised, he said. Usually teams make adjustments according to who's kind of hot in the game. It was really surprising for me, but obviously I had to take advantage of the opportunity, and I did. Iowa Western picked up right where it left off in the second half, converting 2-1 opportunities. But Central battled back and went on 8-4 run to cut the lead to 54-39, nearly 4 minutes into the second half. The Raiders cut the lead to 10 with just over 13 minutes remaining on a 3-point shot and back to the 9 with 6.5 left. The Reavers snack a pair of free throws to stretch. The Reavers sank a pair of free throws to stretch the lead back to 65-54. The two teams traded baskets, but Central cut the lead to 7 with just under 5 minutes left. Iowa Western called a timeout and responded with 3 from redshirt sophomore guard Thomas Faber. The Raiders didn't go away, hitting a 3 of its own to make the score 72-65 with under 4 minutes left. Central sank a pair of free throws to come within 5 out of the time left. The Reavers responded with 2 shots of their own from the charity stripe and forced a stop on defense to make the score 74-67, with 2 minutes showing on the clock. Central refused to go away and converted 2 more free ones to cut the lead back to 5 points with 90 seconds remaining. But Iowa Western responded one more time and freshman guard Jaden Flournoy converted a 3-point opportunity to stretch the lead back to 3 possessions with just over a minute left. McCoy sank 1 of 2 at the line to make the score 78-70 with 47 seconds left, and the Reavers dribbled out the rest of the clock. I was really trying to get our guys to focus on the defensive end, Van Reesen said about his message late in the game. I felt like we just weren't quite as focused within our responsibilities within our team defense. Offensively, I just wanted to continue to attack the rim. They did a pretty good job of protecting the paint. The win improves the Reavers' record to 6-0 on the season. Iowa Western will play next at 4 p.m. on Saturday at Southeast Community College. It definitely feels great, McCoy said about the undefeated start. It all starts in practice. If we lock in during practice, do what we have to do, focus in, and it eventually carries on into the game. Now going forward, it's just about consistency. Just continuing to work hard in practice and focus in. When we go through matchups with different teams, just lock in on those so we can continue the streak going forward. Flournoy scored 15 points, redshirt freshman guard Malik Brooks added 13, and sophomore guard Dwayne Vass tallied 12. Vass also hauled in a team high 7 rebounds and dished out 6 assists. Next article. Headline, Iowa Western falls short. Revere women hoops fall to number 3, Labette, by Peter Hugin. NJCAA Division II, number 15, Iowa Western women's basketball battled with number 3, Labette Community College, and even led after the first quarter on Monday's road game. But the Reveres were outscored 19-9 in the second quarter and didn't bounce back in a 70-67 loss. Iowa Western led 17-14 after the first 10 minutes, but Labette responded by taking a 33-26 lead by halftime. The Reavers cut the lead to 1 by the end of the third quarter. The Cardinals outscored Iowa Western 22-20 in the fourth quarter. IWCC had a chance to tie the game at the end of the regulation, but saw its last second 3-point attempt hit the side of the rim. Iowa Western made 44.1% of their 59 field goals, but Labette put up 73 shots. The Cardinals also went 18 of 25 from the charity stripe, compared to just 10 of 15 for Iowa Western. Labette also took advantage of 22 Revere turnovers. Iowa Western freshman guard Ndidiamaka Ndiku led all players with 22 points on an 8 of 13 night. She also made 5 of 6 from the line and grabbed 4 rebounds. Sophomore guard Mary Delgado scored 14 points, and freshman forward Michelle Butler added 11. Butler finished with a double-double, grabbing 13 rebounds. Sophomore guard Ruba Abo-Hadish dished out a team-high 5 assists. Iowa Western is in action next at 7 p.m. on Wednesday at Southeast Community College. Final score, Labette 70, Iowa Western 67. Next article, Titans go marching into title. Lewis Central Football eyes Cedar Rapids Xavier by Austin Heinen. This article is accompanied by a photo. with caption, Lewis Central players sing with the student section after the Titans' victory against Waverly Shell Rock on Thursday during the semifinal round of the state football championships at the UNI Dome in Cedar Falls. You see the football team raising their helmets, the cheerleaders and their pom-poms up high, and the student section with hands in the air making noises and cheering. For the first time ever, Lewis Central football will play for a state football championship. However, standing in their way are the Saints of Cedar Rapids Xavier, who will be going for their fourth ever state title. This is just an awesome opportunity for our kids, head coach Justin Comrade said. They've bought into what we've seen coaching them to do since day one. They've put in time and work and have dedicated themselves to improving every week, and it's paid off. To be standing as one of the last two teams and give yourself a shot to win the state championship is always the ultimate goal for every team. We have the opportunity that everyone wishes for. A big part of how Lewis Central has made their run to the game is because of their defense, who in the second half held Waverly Shell Rock to just 3 points and 270 yards for the whole game, which allowed the Titan offense to score 28 unanswered points to win the game. This week, the Saints bring in another strong rushing attack against a Titan defense that has made its life difficult on run. This week, the Saints bring in another strong rushing attack against a Titan defense that has made life difficult on run. First of offenses. That has made life difficult on run. First offenses. The Titans will need one more strong performance from their defense against the run, as Saints are led by a three-headed monster with seniors Alex Neal and Will Hisoriot, in addition to junior Michael Cunningham, who all have run over 530 yards on the season and average at least 4.5 yards per carry. The old cliche is defense wins championships, Comrade said. We know our defense is going to have to play well. Hopefully we can get some three and outs, force punts, and put the field position in our favor. That with any game, though, you have to go and win the battle. And our defense has done a great job through the postseason. Our guys have attacked our game plan like they know how to and have gotten themselves ready. And we believe we can do that again here like we have been all year. We have to be assignment sound and be disciplined with your approach, play gap sound, and just trust the guy next to you. That's going to be the biggest thing. We can't be doing other guys' jobs. We have to worry about our own and rallying to the football. When you're going against a team that has multiple guys who can run the football, you know you have a challenging task. But if every guy does their job and we put ourselves in the right spot, it's going to give us chances to be successful. The Saints have run for 2,262 yards for the season. While the Saints may not throw as often as other teams, they've been very efficient in the times when they do throw the ball. Senior quarterback Alex Neal has thrown 1,452 yards and completed an impressive 69% of his throws. While the Titans need to stop the run, they know the Saints are more than capable of executing through the air. They scheme things up really well, and they execute at a very high level, Comrade said. That's one thing Xavier does really well. They do a great job of putting their guys in position to make plays, and they usually do make the play when they have the opportunity. It really adds another caveat to our scheme. They're going to try to get their guys like Aiden McDermott touches through air and ground. They're going to want to get their tight ends involved. We're going to have to be ready for that and understand that this is the championship game and they're going to make plays. It's just a matter of not allowing big plays to happen continuously. On paper, Lewis Central seems to have the stronger, more balanced overall offense. However, penalties against the Gohawks hindered the Titans in the first half. Lewis Central knows with a championship on the line against a team that has been in this game before, the Titans have to play as flawlessly as possible. That's one thing we've really been preaching to them all year, Comrade said. We have to limit the mistakes and take care of the small things, and then big things will happen. Offensively, we want to be very balanced in our approach with our running back and receivers. We want to get them some space again to make plays and ultimately just feel like their defense out. and figure out how to get down the field vertically. It took us a little while last Thursday to figure it out, But our guys did a fabulous job of sticking to the plan, kept grinding away, and the more we attack, eventually good things are going to happen. Win or lose, this will be the final game for this historic team. Regardless of the outcome, Kamrad implores his players to enjoy the moment. I think the biggest thing here is to enjoy it, Kamrad said. A lot of people never get this opportunity to play in a ball game like this, to be on the stage at the end of the season and chase a state title. The main thing I hope the guys do is just embrace it because it doesn't happen often, if ever, again. These guys have been in some big football games, and for some guys, this is their fourth game in the Dome. The main for them is to play hard, but at the same time, embrace it and let the chips fall where they may. Win or lose, we have one more game to prepare for. We'll see where things go. The kickoff between the Saints and Titans will be at 7 p.m. on Thursday at the UNI Dome in Cedar Falls. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Wednesday, November 17th. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 3 p.m. Iris volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about today's broadcast or any Iris program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 1-877-404-4747. I'm Renee from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for listening.